worldwildlife.org.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio is on. I'm Radical Russ, hanging out here in beautiful, legal Potland, Oregon. Rolla J Studios, we got the strong silicone glow-in-the-dark bong. Completely unbreakable. It only took me 25 years to find a bong I couldn't break. And we're smoking up today. Not even waiting for the 20 after breaks today, because it's Friday and we are excited to be here at the weekend. It's a great time to be alive. And the legal sales continue unabated. I've heard lots of different reports on prices around town as they're going out to recreational consumers. Some dispensaries apparently were charging greater prices to the recreational consumers than to the medical marijuana patients. I heard allusions to, the prices are the same as they've always been for the patients. Well, that tells me then that the prices are higher for the recreational consumers, because I doubt you're lowering the prices for the recreational consumers. And that just has me asking why. Why should the recreational consumer have to pay some sort of extra amount for the marijuana? Now, this isn't an argument about the tax, right? Because it's tax-free to everybody right now. And it will remain tax-free to the patients after January 1st, or January 4th, I guess. While we recreational consumers will pay a 25% temporary tax at the dispensaries, and then eventually up to a 20% tax at the recreational shops. That's not my point. My point is, why should the recreational marijuana be priced higher than the medical marijuana, when where it is coming from at this point is all the medical marijuana supply? Didn't cost any more to get the recreational marijuana for sale. It's all the same marijuana supplied by the medical marijuana growers. And remember how our Oregon system works is kind of janky in the first place, in that these are not like big commercial growing facilities that supply the existing dispensaries. These are supposedly caregiver growers who are growing for one or more patients at a time, and for each one of their patients have 6 mature plants that may produce marijuana. So already they're at a disadvantage as far as not being able to be these big, huge operations that can operate on an economy of scale, right? These are places with 24 plants, 48 plants, somewhere, you know, less than 100 plants usually. So whatever the cost is of producing that marijuana has already been accounted for. Why raise the price on the recreational consumer? Well, because they can. Because just like it's always been, when you're recreational marijuana consumer, you're at the mercy of the dealer. And to those dispensaries that raised prices for the recreational consumers, you're acting like weed dealers. And that's not what the consumers want. I tell you, if I went in and the patient ahead of me gets a quarter ounce for $40, and then they want to charge me $80 for that same quarter ounce, I'm calling shenanigans on that. There's no reason why. You're not giving a discount to the patient. You're not taking the $40 ounce that you had been selling and dropping it, or quarter ounce, and dropping it to $20 for the patient and then keeping the original $40. You're not providing a discount to a patient. You're providing a surcharge to a recreational consumer. I know it's a slight nuance of difference there, but there's a distinct difference. And it's time to end that. My hope is that once January 4th rolls around, we start licensing the commercial recreational growers. And we have economy of scale starting to kick in. And we have a massive production of legal marijuana on the recreational side. Its prices can't help but, or its production costs can't help but be lower than these caregiver grower costs. And when that happens, and the price should come down for weed overall, I'm not saying that patients should have to spend a whole bunch of money for their medicine. I'm saying, hell, $40 a quarter right now is too much for a lot of patients. I'm saying, let's blow this thing up and get that price down to $10 for a quarter or $5 for a quarter. And then throw some taxes on top of that for the recreational consumer, sure. But let's get that price way, way, way down and end this practice of price gouging the cannabis consumers who have no other choice but to accept it. That won't be possible much longer as home grows start kicking in either. Stop thinking like weed dealers and start thinking like businessmen who want return customers.
Jive, Mary, Grifo, Grass, Hay. Technically, it's cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different. Something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
I'm Radical Russ Belville, and you're listening to 420radio.org.
As a police officer, I walked a beat, served on the vice squad and SWAT team, and became an expert on drug addiction. I saw firsthand the effects of Ohio's destructive marijuana laws. Simply put, they don't work. Ohio spends over $100 million each year on this failed effort. It's time for marijuana reform, so law enforcement can spend their time cracking down on real criminals and making Ohio a safer place for our families. Vote yes on 3.
Marijuana may be legal in some states, but it is still very difficult to advertise. Legal marijuana states have strict guidelines about where marijuana ads may be placed. 420 Radio provides advertisers a marijuana-related on-demand platform skewed toward older adults that meets Colorado and other legal states' advertising restrictions. Visit 420radio.org/advertise to learn how you can place web ads that are immune to ad block software and audio ads heard live on 420 Radio and stored permanently in the enormously popular Russ Belville Show podcast. 420 Radio is heard by legions of dedicated fans who make up the activist leadership and entrepreneurial base of serious marijuana law reformers. Our audience is older, better educated, and more financially secure than most marijuana-related media can boast. Learn more at 420radio.org/advertise. Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, neweracpas.com, handle your Canna Business 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Sorry for the delay there. That's music from Midnight to 12. The track is called Rhyme or Reason. Just getting things coordinated with Herb Thrasher for our Rockin' Friday Daily Toker Tune. That's coming up at 4:20, but I had to make sure I knew what he was up to. We've been both pretty busy with this first day of legal marijuana sales in the state of Oregon. And between the two of us, and that, you know, we got Portland Normal stuff that we got to take care of as well. So between both of those things, it's been a little hectic. But yes, we will have Herb calling in, and we'll have the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour coming up this 8 p.m. Pacific time. And check it out. We're going to be playing one of the bands that performed at the Boston Freedom Rally. They are called Tiger Man Woe. And they're like, you know, hillbillies on acid. I don't know how else to explain it. They are something to behold. So we'll talk more about that on the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour tonight. And you'll hear a track from Tiger Man Woe recorded live in Boston coming up at 4:20. Now, I want to get to a story here that just makes me very, very angry. It's entitled How Some Alabama Hospitals Quietly Drug Test New Mothers Without Their Consent. It's reported by Nina Martin of ProPublica and Amy Yerkanen of Alabama.com. And this is another aspect of the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs that gets missed sometimes. And that is these Alabama hospitals that drug test their kids. And this happens in hospitals all over the country, but it's particularly odious in Alabama because they have a new chemical endangerment law. Well, not new. It's been around since 2006. But this law is the strictest in the country about pregnant mothers using drugs. And it requires hospitals and maternity centers and nurses and all these, you know, public health officials to be required reporters, mandatory reporters on this information, right? Like, you know, when the teacher in school finds out that one of the kids is being beaten up by his dad or something, you know, child abuse, or finds out that the daughter is being sexually abused, whatever it might be, they're required to report that by law, right? They get in trouble if they do not report that to the authorities. That's what's going on in Alabama with moms that are found to have used drugs during their pregnancy. And according to this report, the punishment is pretty strict. 1 to 10 years in prison if they merely determine that your child was exposed to drugs. Now, by exposed to drugs, what we mean, folks, is when the little infant baby is born, they test the baby's meconium. That's a nice little word that means infant poop. They test the first baby's poop because that's the poop that the baby's built up while it's been in the womb. So it's kind of like a urine test. You know how a urine test will show metabolites of THC for, you know, a long time and a frequent user. But even better from their perspective, because the infant poop saves up the entire, this is the waste product from most of the last part of the pregnancy. Okay, the last half at least. So we're able to take months and months and months here of whether or not this kid has been exposed to drugs. Not alcohol, by the way. Alcohol's not the concern here, even though we know that there's such a thing as fetal alcohol syndrome, and it's legitimate and very devastating. I do not believe this law applies to that. It's in the Alabama code. We'll look at it. This is a responsible person commits the crime of chemical endangerment of exposing a child to an environment in which he or she does any of the following: knowingly, recklessly, or intentionally causes or permits a child to be exposed to or ingest or inhale or to have contact with a controlled substance, chemical substance, or drug paraphernalia as defined in Section 138, blah, 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 blah. So, a chemical substance, well, maybe alcohol would apply. I haven't heard any stories, though, of Alabama women being busted for their kids having fetal alcohol syndrome, but maybe it's happening, so let's just that we'll give that caveat. But since 2006, this law has been used to charge nearly 500 women with endangering their unborn children. And in many of these cases, the cops are doing it because of the hospital-administered drug test, the positive giving them a probable cause to prosecute. So we're talking 1 to 10 years for exposure, even if the baby turns out perfectly healthy. 10 to 20 years if the baby shows signs of exposure or harm. And 10 to 99 years if the baby dies. Now, we know in the case of marijuana, the baby's not going to die, but there's the possibility of showing signs of exposure. There's a recent study just came out saying that marijuana babies have lower birth weights. Not that there's any harm coming from that, but just that they might have lower birth weights. So 10 to 20 years for that. So think about the unintended consequence of this. First of all, of course, this is happening more often to poor mothers and more often to African-American mothers. No question about that. But think of the unintended incentivization for mothers to not seek medical assistance, to say, want to give birth to the kid at home where it's not going to be tested and there's not the chance that Child Protective Services will take the newborn infant away because the mom might have smoked a joint for her morning sickness, let's say.
Hide the dope.
We don't have any dope.
And what did I just smoke?
But nobody thinks about those unintended consequences when they make these tough on drugs sort of laws. All you're doing is making a poor woman not want to go see the doctor, not to get prenatal care, and to not have her birth in a hospital. That's what you're incentivizing. The cure is worse than the disease.
This is Lori Duckworth, and I'm here with the Hempery, Greta Gaines Company, and you're listening to 420 Radio.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together. So let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Rockin' Friday, featuring rock, metal, and the hard edge of alternative country. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, folks, welcome back. It's 420 here, 420 break at least, here at Rolla J Studios in our first legal sales week. and it feels really good to be in the middle of this. Herb Thrasher is at work, as he usually is. He emailed me earlier in the hour asking if we were going to be doing a call-in today, because I originally was going to do a replay today. I had a doctor's appointment, but my wife also had a doctor's appointment, and her appointment extended to the point where I wasn't going to make my appointment. I know, TMI, but didn't preclude me from doing a show today, so I did one. And so he wasn't aware that we'd be doing a call-in, and I don't think he got the email in time to recognize that we would be doing a call-in. But I can tell you that we're going to have a great episode of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour tonight. We've got more of the bands from the Boston Freedom Rally to play for you. Some excellent music that I heard live. I got to tell you, Boston Freedom Rally, of all the marijuana events I do, has the best, most eclectic lineup of music that I've heard anywhere. And that's just with two stages. They just do a great job there. And one of the bands that played, a big favorite of Herb's and now a favorite of mine, is called Tiger Man Whoa. And that's actually in all caps, W-O-A-H and an exclamation point. So I'm not just shouting at you. It's Tiger Man Whoa. So I don't know what the band name means, but these guys, what a show to watch. First of all, I, of course, was transfixed on the bass player, who plays a old school stand-up bass and plays it, you know, rockabilly rape style, right? Like, he jumps on top of the thing and stands on it and twirls it and picks it up, and just amazing guy. And hillbilly looking, with kind of overalls and the big beard, and it's just amazing. A lead singer / banjo player who plays thrash banjo, and a guitar player. Again, all these guys with the big beards and the overall look, you know. And a great drummer as well. They play these acoustic instruments and electric instruments together and do something that's kind of a cross between hillbilly music and death metal. It's just the most amazing thing. They've got a new album out. It's called, let's see if I got that album name correctly here, Up South Volume 2, because they're up in Massachusetts, right? So Up South Volume 2. And this is the song called Guess So and Take Me Home, on our 420 Daily Toker Tunes.
there's a place called Loki Pinocchio, where the alligators rule the whole swamp. You go to a certain part about 45 miles down exit 34, Route 12, you'll find a place that only the kids know about. Well, they'll ride on alligators like they was bulls. And alligators don't mind at all. It's like they're them birds that pick shit out their teeth. And I'm telling you, the whole South is like that. Well, if you get far enough into the woods.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to 420 Radio. Listen Saturdays at noon Pacific for Medical Marijuana Radio, podcasting at medicalmarijuanaradio.com. Larry Love is reporting on the latest national news and studies concerning medical use of cannabis with interviews of experts and policy analysis. Check our online listings for Medical Marijuana Radio with Larry Love from medicalmarijuanaradio.com. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
All right, you know we're going to have an Herb Thrasher Flower Hour tonight when some 6 feet under comes up on the random replay. That zombie blood curse. Of course it is. Speaking of zombies, I hope you're enjoying those zombie shows. My wife and I are really into that Fear the Walking Dead, which its season finale is this Sunday, I guess. And then the other Walking Dead starts again the next week, so that's a lot of fun. There's a marijuana story that's kind of blown my mind. I'm not sure how to frame this, so I'm just going to go with it. Huffington Post is reporting that a new law has been signed in New York by Governor Andrew Cuomo. And this law will prevent judges from being able to order defendants in recovery to stop taking their medications. And what they're talking about here is things like Suboxone, other drugs that can be used, methadone, for example, that can help addicts be weaned off of their deadly addictions. These medications prescribed by doctors, and then when the addict ends up in court and having to be punished or sentenced by the judge, they order him to stop taking Suboxone or methadone. It's like, what, you want this guy to go back to heroin? what's the logic in that? Now, the thing that blows my mind about this story is that this law basically copies and pastes information directly from policy suggestions from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, a.k.a. the Drug Czar. In February, they announced that drug courts would not receive any federal funding if they continued to force addicts off of Suboxone, methadone, and other type of medications. And so the Drug Control Policy Office, the Drug Czar's office, making that threat, we're not going to send you any more federal money to your state drug courts if your judges keep telling the addicts to get off of methadone, sent the right signal, certainly moved the needle there in Albany as far as getting this legislation passed. It's amazing, but I have to applaud the Drug Czar's office for doing something right. It's stunning. Drug Czar Michael Botticelli told reporters in a conference call, quote, "As the Huffington Post article pointed out, we have highly effective medications when combined with other behavioral supports that are the standard of care for the treatment of opiate addiction. And for a long time, and what continues to this day, is a tremendous amount of misunderstanding about these drugs, particularly within our criminal justice system." So we're expanding access. Now, there's a lot I've still got a problem with as far as drug courts go. You know my issue with drug courts. The idea of drug courts, of course, is if somebody's got an addiction, they commit a crime, instead of locking them up and throwing away the key, we'll take them to this drug court where we'll give them rehab and job training and we'll drug test them. And if they fail any of that, then, of course, then they go to the prison. And sometimes for longer sentences than if they just originally taken the first plea deal they were given, right? So, yeah, they give you the drug court, but if you fail the drug court, the punishment's much greater in the long run. And, of course, I've told you how the drug courts, I've shown you how the drug courts get abnormally high success ratings because of all the pot smokers that are forced through the drug courts. See, you're evaluating this system that really, you could argue there's a need for it at the hard drug addict level, the heroin, cocaine, meth, and even alcohol addict level, where their addiction drives them to crime sometimes. And really a lot of that is just the prohibition that drives them to crime. But at least in the paradigm we've got right now, the addiction drives them to the crime that actually does harm society. The robberies, the vandalism, the drunk driving, and so forth. So you could make the argument that, hey, a drug court, at least in that circumstance, is a good thing. Let's get this person off of drugs. They won't commit those crimes anymore. Problem is evaluating the success rate of those particular drug courts, you're comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing highly addicted, physically dependent apples to pothead oranges, right? So if you're going to say, well, drug courts have been shown to be successful in 83% or whatever number they throw at you, you got to take it with a grain of salt, because a large proportion of that success is going to be potheads who you threatened them with jail if they fail a pee test and they go, okay, I won't smoke pot. So you get 10 of those guys that succeed, and then you take your 4 heroin addicts and maybe only one of them succeeds. Let's say 5 heroin addicts, maybe one of them succeeds, and the other 4, as is common with drug addiction, have a relapse and they fail and they end up going to prison. You're able to say, well, we had 15 people come in with drug addiction and 11 of them succeeded. Yeah, 10 potheads and 1 heroin addict, right? And then the rest of the heroin addicts got a far worse sentence. So that's my problem with the drug courts, is you can't really rationally evaluate them when we're mixing soft, non-addictive drugs with hard drugs. What if we caught you, if we caught anybody that drank more than 2 cups of coffee a day or more than a 42-ounce soda a day, and we pushed them through the drug court system for caffeine, and we drug tested to make sure they didn't drink any caffeine? Well, do you think there'd be a high success rate? Probably. Probably not as high as the marijuana rate, actually. Caffeine's more addictive. But, I mean, I hope you get the point. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's my big problem with the drug court. But given that drug courts are going to exist for the time being, at least it's a good thing that now they're not going to be ordered off of these helpful medications, at least in the state of New York. But just when I could give a little bit of credit to the Drug Czar's office, I got to take a little away. There's a great article Jacob Sullum wrote this Wednesday, how prohibition causes deaths from fentanyl-spiked heroin. Now, heroin, fentanyl, I should say, is an incredible opiate painkiller. It's 40 times as strong as pure heroin. It's synthetic. It kicks oxycodone's ass, Vicodin's ass, Percocet's. Fentanyl is the shit on the opiate list. It is the atom bomb. It's the biggie. So what's happening here is black market heroin dealers, you know, through the process, the pure heroin at each stage can get cut. All sorts of weird ass shit that they'll cut it with, you know, vitamins and, you know, baby formulas and all sorts of weird shit. And as such, as it gets cut more and more cut, less and less pure, it packs less and less kick. And as an illegal drug dealer, you don't get to have commercials. You don't get catchy jingles and get to make ads or anything like that. The only thing you can sell on is how good your shit is. He's got the best shit. Go to Spike. He's got the best shit. That's the word of mouth advertising is all you got. So you want your stuff to be powerful. So these heroin dealers are spiking the impure heroin with fentanyl. And that is causing, of course, an overdose epidemic. The Washington Post notes that the DEA issued a nationwide health alert on fentanyl, reporting that state and local drug labs reported seeing 3,344 fentanyl samples in 2014, up 942 from 2013. We're talking an increase of about 25% at this point. Three fatal overdoses with fentanyl spiked heroin in New York and Connecticut, and others where heroin users were resuscitated at hospitals. And again, these get lodged in the public's mind as drug-related deaths, but really, what we're talking about is prohibition-related deaths. See, Jacob makes a great analogy at the beginning. Remember the guy who bought 80-proof vodka that turned out to be 190-proof Everclear and he died from alcohol poisoning? No. Because that doesn't happen. When you buy alcohol, you know what proof you're getting. It's right there on the label. It's tested, and it has to be that. Believe it or not, people that are addicted to heroin don't want to die. They do not have a death wish. They're not doing heroin because they want to die. And if they had heroin that they could get, that they knew was the exact purity of heroin, most of these heroin addicts have a pretty good handle on how much they use, how much will get them high. And they could use it reliably and safely without dying if they knew how much it was. There are so many of these overdose deaths that have to do with the inconsistency and impurity of these drugs. And this, I hope marijuana reformers and my audience out there that I know probably none of you do heroin. And there's a tendency in our movement sometimes to kind of demonize the hard drugs. Well, at least we don't, we're not, at least it's not meth. It's not meth or anything, right? And there can be this cliquishness about marijuana that, like, we're the ones doing the natural one. That's not really a drug. It's just good for you. It's nature. You know, we have that cliquishness to us and we'll sometimes look down on the people that use these other drugs. But every principle that we're applying to ending the prohibition of marijuana applies even more so to ending the prohibition of the drugs that can actually harm you. There's nothing about the prohibition of heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, LSD, ecstasy, of any of these drugs that are making these drugs less harmful. Nothing about making them illegal makes them less harmful. Everything that makes them more harmful can be traced to the prohibition. Even just including just the fact that you can be arrested for it is a harm that doesn't exist aside from the prohibition existing. But these additional harms of impure, unknown drugs, of violent dealers and traffickers, of having no recourse for customer satisfaction, you find you got a bad bag or whatever. No recourse. Only recourse is violence. Nothing about legalization will make the drugs any more dangerous than they already are. And it will make it far more safer for the people who really do have a problem with them. We don't try to solve any other public health crisis by arresting the victims of it. It's time for us to stop doing that with all drugs and to consider there needs to be some sort of access and regulation for all drugs. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
This is Robert Blatchard, and you're listening to 420 Radio with Radical Russ Belville.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
All right, folks, for some prime Reefer Madness, we head back to the state of Ohio, where Cincinnati.com has published an op-ed by Judge Sylvia Sieve Hendon. She's the presiding judge of Ohio's First District Court of Appeals. She opens with a quotation. "I feel like no one can get me. I am a zombie. I have special powers. Nobody can kill me. They can shoot at me, but I still keep going. I'm powerful and can see the future. Script from a bad sci-fi movie? I only wish." This is a quote from a youth charged with felonious assault with a firearm, a crime that has become routine on my docket as I preside by Supreme Court assignment in the Hamilton County Juvenile Court. By his own admission, this boy first used marijuana at age 12. And has used regularly and heavily since that time, and even admits he was able to access it while in court-ordered placements. He claims to have a secret method to beat urine screens and considers himself absolutely addicted to weed. Okay, so let's interject for a moment here. So now, at this time in Ohio, where marijuana is illegal and a crime, this boy was able to get a hold of marijuana, right? Okay, just checking, right? So right now, under prohibition, is what led to this kid in this situation. All right, let the judge continue.
As with most of his delinquent peers, that isn't the only problem. From marijuana usage, he introduced alcohol and now mixes a combination of weed, pills, and alcohol to get to his desired feeling, like no one can get me. He particularly favors lean, a combination of codeine mixed with soda and sugar, as in candy, and says he loves how he feels and can't stop.
Okay, so now, under prohibition, the kid starts with weed and then he moves on to pills and alcohol and codeine. But it's the marijuana that's an issue. Okay, let her continue.
His addiction is so overpowering, he once discontinued prescribed antibiotics because they were messing with his illicit drugs of choice, thereby putting his physical health in extreme jeopardy. The professional who examined this boy for the court uncovered no underlying psychiatric disorder or mental health issue, which is so often the explanation given for aberrant delinquent behavior. This youth is motivated solely by his overwhelming addiction and the accompanying results of it. In his own words, he boldly boasts he intends to resume as soon as he is able. His 48 contacts with the juvenile court by age 17, beginning with a serious felony at the age of 12, and including three separate and very expensive placements for treatment and rehabilitation at taxpayer expense, find him now facing transfer to the adult court. Why tell this story when it differs really so little from what I've seen during my 35 years on and off in the juvenile justice system? This youth's graphic description of his journey from marijuana use to more sophisticated drugs of choice highlights the imperative need that we as a society do not become so mesmerized by the arguments that marijuana is really not a problem, that we accept its routine use as a part of our way of life in Ohio.
Okay, so the judge here is making, of course, the classic fallacy of the gateway argument. The idea that a 12-year-old kid started smoking weed, and then he moved on to pills and alcohol and codeine. Now, let's also recall in the story that he admits using marijuana at age 12. His serious felony was at the age of 12. And from that point, continued on to have many, many more contacts with the juvenile justice system. There is where she is making the fallacy of post hoc ergo propter hoc, because this happened and then that happened, this caused that. Hop, kid started smoking marijuana and then he committed a violent felony. Kid continued using alcohol and pills and codeine and has had 48 contacts with juvenile court. Could it be, Judge, that this is just a rotten kid? That him being a rotten kid led him to be the kind of risk taker who takes drugs and the kind of risk taker who commits crimes. The kind of kid who lacks impulse control enough to do drugs and lacks impulse control enough to commit crimes. That the root cause of what's going on with this kid isn't the drugs, but the drugs are a symptom, along with his juvenile behavior, of some greater underlying cause. But too often, these family courts and judges want to ascribe it all to the drugs without realizing that the kid taking the drugs may be taking them to escape from something that's destroying him on the inside, emotionally, mentally, mental health issues. She says in the thing, he found to have no underlying mental health issues. I don't think you're looking hard enough. Her op-ed concludes, "Marijuana is not a harmless substance. Increased usage, even if legal, will increase the need and cost of treatment. Marijuana supporters like to compare it to alcohol. Apparently, there is some intellectual disconnect in that reasoning, since alcohol abuse accounted for nearly 60,000 OVI cases in 2013 and countless tragic consequences such as broken families, lost employment, and most tragic, vehicular homicides." Yes, Judge, but here's the problem with that reasoning. This is one of your apples to oranges fallacies. First of all, alcohol causing tragic consequences comes from the psychopharmacological effects of alcohol. Alcohol makes you violent and impaired.
alcohol leads to those broken families because of the way the drug alcohol works. Marijuana does not cause that. Marijuana does not cause people to want to beat up their spouse and to want to drive recklessly. And to want to... It's an apples to oranges comparison. And the other problem with this, this is a mistake that Kevin Sabet made many times when we say, oh, legalization advocates like to say that if we legalize marijuana, it would free up all this police time. When in actuality, if you look at how much time cops have to spend dealing with alcohol, and it's legal with alcohol violations and underage drinking and blah, 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 blah. The argument is, if we legalize it, there's just more laws that have to be followed, and then more cops are needed to make sure those laws are obeyed. But the fallacy of that reasoning is it's, again, comparing one thing, marijuana, that is illegal now and suffers a certain amount of criminal justice cost, and saying that legalizing it would increase it to the point where the legal drug alcohol is, or worse, and does not consider what would the arrests and the harm be of the legal drug alcohol if it were treated like marijuana. How much lost employment would there be if the random piss test could detect whether or not you drank a beer in the past week or month and get you fired for that? How much of a consequence are people going to suffer if detecting a beer can in someone's garbage was reason to get a warrant to ransack their house, haul their kids off to Child Protective Services, and to put mom and dad behind bars? How many more arrests would there be compared to what we have now for drunk driving and a minor in possession and so forth? She concludes, the imposition of a lengthy prison sentence may interrupt one defendant's hellish dependency, but he has told us in no uncertain terms that he intends to resume his addiction as soon as he can. The next time he is feeling his superpowers and his invincibility, you or someone you love may be on the receiving end as his helpless victim. Okay, so what you're telling us is that if you keep marijuana illegal, this kid will still be the way he is. If we legalize it, this kid will be the way he is. It's a rotten kid, Judge. Sometimes the kids are just rotten. It's not the marijuana that's making them rotten. Far more of the kids using the marijuana are good kids who we have nothing to fear from. Oh, my goodness. This is like the emergency room doctor who sees nothing but alcohol-related fatalities coming in on New Year's Eve and then deciding... alcohol needs to be banned. Look at all the deaths that are coming from alcohol. They never make that connection, do they? They never see alcohol as the gateway drug. They never see alcohol as a hard drug that it actually is. Alcohol, like gun deaths in this country, we just have to accept it. We have to accept it. It's part of our culture. I couldn't make it through the whole show without talking about the gun thing, could I? That's all the time we got for this weekend. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back on Monday with more news and views you can use for the cannabis community. I'm Radical Russ from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.